You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Hello and welcome to the 602 Club, TFM's local watering hole. And I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. So excited to be here. And I'm really excited because I have a brand new voice for the network and the show. And what's crazy is that I've never actually podcasted with somebody who lives probably 10 minutes from me, except for when I was doing it for the church, and my friend Courtney and I would podcast together. But now I'm really excited to be able to be joined by, he's the youth pastor at our other church here that I'm a part of. And Rye, it's so great to have you here on the 602 Club.
Dude, I'm very happy to be here. Yeah, I feel like ever since I met you, we were talking about doing this, and I'm happy to finally be on. Pumped.
Yeah, me too. And it really is crazy because so we both we both work for a church that is all connected together with five different churches, and so I have recorded with our friend Courtney. We did a podcast for like 50 episodes, and then COVID hit, and she had gotten pregnant, and so we never got back to that. But that was my only experience of actually recording live in person.
Yeah,
I've never done that before. And so, but to actually podcast with somebody that I legit see almost every week is really cool. And so I'm so thankful that you wanted to do this, because this wasn't actually even on, because I'll create a schedule.
Totally.
I listeners know a little bit about this, but I create a schedule. I usually start about this time of year, and I'll look through next year's schedule for films, and I'll kind of create a list of all the movies that I think might be interesting to be able to talk about. And this was not on the schedule at all for me, because I had no idea whether I would like it, if it would be good, you know, and so, but I just went and saw this on a whim, and because I had, you know, I have Fridays off, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go see it. And it turned out to be good, and I was like, I need somebody to podcast with, and I was like, I wonder if Rye's available. So this is so fun that you're actually here and we get to do this.
Yeah, it's I agree with you. Like, this is not a movie that was like necessarily on my radar in terms of like I knew, I mean, I'm very within the movie sphere, so I know what's coming out. So I knew this was coming, but up until 2 weeks ago, I had not seen a single Predator movie. And so it was like, all right, this looks good. I want to get ready for it. And I watched, you know, some stuff to prep. Great. And then it's like, wow, this, you know, it worked out perfectly. So it's like a new enjoyment I'm having of this franchise. So I'm happy to talk about it.
That's so cool. Well, we're going to dive in just a second. I just want to remind everybody, of course, you can find us all over social media, and we're under the name Trek FM. So we're on X Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. We've got a listeners only discussion group you can join called the Babel Conference over there on Facebook. Of course, we're online at trek.fm, and we're on Patreon at patreon.com/TrekFM, and you can join our team and, of course, support all that we're doing here to make sure things keep coming to you. But so, Rye, you already started hitting on this idea that I was kind of wondering about, because obviously the Predator franchise has been around for a long time, with the original movie that came out with Schwarzenegger. We've actually talked about it here on the network, but you kind of mentioned what your previous hunts were like in this. Mm-hmm. And so did you watch all of the Predator films or, you know, parts of the fandom before you went into Badlands?
Yeah, so I didn't watch all of them. There's, I believe, 8 total now with Badlands. And so I was like, wanted to be strategic about there's like a lot of stuff to watch. And so I was like, all right, what do I want to watch? So I watched the original. I'd never seen that. I then watched, the Trachtenberg, movies, which is Prey, which came out in 2022, and then Killer of Killers, which came out earlier this year, the animated film on Hulu. And I almost got time to watch Predator 2. I was trying to watch it today, but I ran out of time. But so I haven't seen like most of them, but in terms of like, and then obviously I've seen Badlands now, but I saw the original, and then I've seen like this Trachtenberg era now of this new way of going about the franchise.
Yeah, that is really interesting, because I hadn't seen anything until we talked about it on the show back on episode 275. So it's been a while. But yeah, I mean, when you think about this, you know, you had Predator, Predator 2, Predators, The Predator. And then, you know, you get into the Trachtenberg, you know, almost like, you know how in Star Wars they call it the Filoni verse? Is this the Trachtenberg verse, you know, where it's like his version of the Predator? And so, but I haven't seen anything else other than the original Predator and then this. And so, I think one of the things that, you know, in some ways we're not all that dissimilar, but what was it then about coming into this movie? Like, what caught your attention that you're like, oh, I think I want to see this?
Yeah. So, I mean, I see everything in general. So, like, that's a part of this. Like, it was just like something like on my list of things to kind of just do in the month of November. Like, all right, there's nothing else really coming out this weekend. I'm going to see it. But it wasn't a priority. There was things I was planning on seeing before it. But then I watched Predator a couple weeks ago, the original. And I was like, this is cool. Schwarzenegger's cool. This movie rocks. Obviously, it's very dated. But in a way that's...
It's like the most classic 80s film. It's amazing.
The visuals aren't amazing, but like you really love it. It's like... I don't know. I was talking to my dad about it, who saw it back in the day, and he's like, yeah, this movie rocks. I was like, yeah, I totally agree. But then I was like, okay, it was earlier last week, and I was like, all right, I need to watch these movies. I watched Killer of Killers, and I was like, this is sweet. This is really cool, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later, or at least I will in terms of the connection. But then on Thursday, I watched Prey like late afternoon after I was getting done with work. I turned it on when I was at home and I was like, this is like this guy, Dan Trachtenberg, gets it. I was like, this is so cool. This is such a diversion from the original Predator, but also keeps the same flow. I was like, and I canceled my original movie plans I had for Thursday night and went and watched this in IMAX because I was interested. But then I watched what Trachtenberg was doing with this new wave of Predator. And I was like, I need to see what he has for Badlands. And so it was like on a whim. I was going to see it like Saturday afternoon, just, you know, whatever, didn't really care. And then I watched his other movies. I was like, there's something about him, kind of like the Filoni-verse aspect, where it's like perfect casting, but perfect director for a franchise almost.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that kind of caught my attention was this aspect of having it be about the predators themselves and, you know, what they do to basically become a predator as we know them, as we've seen them before. And I thought that was actually a really interesting idea.
Yeah.
And there was such something about the look of the movie, the feel of the movie, even from the trailers, that caught my attention, you know, and in some ways I think that, you know, it didn't feel like it gave the whole movie away, which too many trailers do these days.
Right.
You know, both you and I see a lot of movies and we see a lot of trailers, and man, too many trailers, you're like, dude, I just saw the whole movie. I don't need to see that movie.
And sometimes the trailer's better than the actual movie.
So true. And yet this one, I think that they just hit all the right notes about kind of what this movie was going to be. Like, they gave away the vibe of this film without actually giving away the film.
Yeah, totally.
And that's something that I think, like you were talking about, your feeling after watching Prey and Killer of Killers, that Trachtenberg really has just kind of a like he has a Predator vibe that he's created that people are really digging and getting into. And that's something that I think I just picked up on in the trailer that made this movie feel like a curiosity to me that I actually wanted to scratch. You know, like I had an itch that they created and now I want to go see this. And so, and I'm really glad I did. So I'm not going to give it away ratings wise or anything, but like, yeah, I felt like this movie was definitely worth seeing and seeing on a great big screen and a great presentation because everything about it in that sense was awesome. But one of, I think, the major hallmarks of this film and the thing that kind of attracted me to it was the idea of that we're going to be building the Yautja culture. You know, this movie is going to dig into their culture in a way that we haven't before, except for maybe in like other materials like comics or those type of things, really. And so I wanted to ask you what you kind of thought about that world building that happened here. And what we learn about the Yautjas, and did you find that to be a successful vision for this people?
Yeah, I think totally. I mean, as far as what I understand about the franchise as a whole through all like the years is like it's interesting because they've had different Yautjas, like they've all been different, but they hasn't been really explored in any way until Trachtenberg has got a hold of this. Killer of Killers does it a lot too, where you really see the differences and you see their planet in that movie as well. And I think then we just get even more like there's this, you know, like the honor culture, there's shame culture. Like these are like not just aliens that have like no feelings, that just have a random hunt and they're like animalistic. Like these are, it's given like human characteristics where they feel shame. Like the beginning of the movie, our main character Deck like feels shame. He's the runt of his tribe, of his clan. And that is a really compelling thing, I think, that I didn't know would actually work, where the original movie is, it's this alien that jumps into Earth and it's like, gotta kill the scary alien. Where now it adds so many different layers to this world. It builds it out, the tech within there, the training. Like it's not randomly picking something. It's like decisions being made by these creatures to then prove themselves to their clan. And we don't even know how many clans there are. And yeah, I mean, there's just a lot to unpack that I think they play off of, and making even then a Predator the protagonist of a movie is, I mean, it completely flips everything you expect about a Predator movie on its head. And I was like, okay, immediately first scene, I was like, I'm totally in, I'm bought in. Did you feel similar to that? Like, did you like the protagonist aspect of it rather than antagonist?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the things that so many of these franchises do, right? I think the Alien franchise has really suffered from this until they did Alien Earth, which was the alien problem is always the same. And the aliens are always just the antagonist, which, you know, okay, whatever. And yet, so for us to take the Yautja, to take the Predator culture and actually make it into something that is its own thing. And I mean, in so many ways, if you're a sci-fi fan, you've seen this play out before in different arenas, you know. I think especially what became known as the Klingon culture from Star Trek, especially in the Next Generation and very much in Deep Space Nine, kind of borrowed somewhat from this idea, the honor shame culture that's so prevalent, but also the warrior culture, this idea that your status is based on who you are as a warrior. And of course that's very much that kind of Viking feel that this is all borrowing from. And so to me, I really enjoyed the fact that we were going to dig into that. But like you said, the thing that the movie does is it places us in the shoes of Deck, who is our protagonist, but is also the antithesis almost to his culture, right? Mm-hmm. He wants to be a part of his culture, and yet they're rejecting him because he's just not good enough. He's too small. Mm-hmm. He's not fast enough. He's not strong enough. He's not what all the things that they would look up to and say, hey, you need this. And I loved the idea that, again, you kind of said it, but it's like we are going to flip this all around and allow us to actually experience these creatures as actual characters and mm-hmm. not just a boogeyman.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I think that until Alien Earth, that was the thing that the Alien franchise has not been able to do very well. You know, mm-hmm. anytime you've tried to like humanize or anything like that, or make them feel more interesting other than just big baddies. Mm-hmm. It hasn't worked at all. I mean, you know, Alien Resurrection is horrible. And so, I mean, the least said about that, the better. And so,
sure.
But that's something that, like you were saying, it's like Trachtenberg just has an in for this culture. And maybe it's just that. I know that the Alien and Predator universes are linked.
It, all over this movie.
But I think that's maybe the thing also that's more interesting about Yautjas than our xenomorphs, right? Is that there is something that you could feel like you could build a character off of mm-hmm. rather than just, I mean, because xenomorphs basically just feel like massive bugs who are just reacting again until we get to Alien Earth, where we're actually starting to kind of dig into them in mm-hmm. that way. The idea of building this culture, I would think, and I do think that it's one of the most important parts of this film. It's the part I think that makes it the most interesting, really. Mm-hmm. And it actually allows, I think, for this franchise to possibly be able to have a future, because we're not just trying to redo the same thing over and over and over again, which is what we were doing since Predator 2.
Yeah, I think that it does create a future. It creates, like, we're not doing the same movie, like you said, just repeating it, run it back. Like, you can do like little tweaks, but like at the end of the day, it's the same plot points. You got humans versus a predator, try to survive. Like, that's what Prey is. I think Prey does it extremely well. That's a movie that I really like. But this is like, no, there's rich culture here. That they use it through the subtext, like through the themes of the movie, with like we were talking about with his Deck shame and like trying to live up to his father's honor and all this stuff. But then like, I think I really liked how Trachtenberg clearly places details throughout the movie that clearly shows how fully fledged this franchise can get, like in his ship with all the skulls of the trophies he has, like this, there's that aspect, all the weaponry and like technology and like all these things that are like, you know, we knew, I'm sure there's more and stuff that in movies we haven't seen, but like a laser sword and a laser bow and arrow, like these cool, like amazing technological advancements that are like, wow, this, like the world is Trachtenberg's oyster and what he can do, or what director obviously takes on the next movies, given that this movie does well.
Yeah, no, I think on that, I absolutely agree with you. And I think it's kind of exciting to see what they can do. And this, you know, for me, it makes me excited to actually go back now and get a chance to watch Prey and then Killer of Killers and, you know, see what he's done. Mm-hmm. And then kind of, I'm sure what it'll do is give me a better understanding maybe of what he might do. And so I wanted to ask you about this because it's interesting that Deck is our main character, and yet the only person who's really recognizable in this film is Elle Fanning, mm-hmm. playing the twins of these Weyland-Yutani synthetics. And the main one that we spent time with is Thea, and the other one is Tessa. And I wanted to ask you just about how you thought she did performance-wise, especially playing two different characters. And did her character work for you? Because in all honesty, I mean, she's the character that if she doesn't work for you, this movie's going to be terrible.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting, like, obviously we get the Yaoxian, like, talking. He's, like, talking throughout the movie, but it's obviously, you know, there's, like, subtitles for him. And but she, Elle Fanning's talking a lot. Like, she's a lot of this movie. She's playing this other character, which we don't know from the trailers, which I was like, oh, this is cool. Really big year for same actor playing two roles, by the way. I don't know if you've noticed that, but there's like six different actors playing twins or like same role. But she's great. And like you, I wondered how she would be because she's Elle Fanning is an actress that is in some pretty like highbrow type movies. Like she's in a movie coming out that in 2 weeks called Sentimental Value. That's like an Oscar darling that she could be nominated for an Academy Award. And it's like, is she just going to phone this in, take a paycheck? Which is entirely possible, but no, she's funny. She's incredibly charming. She adds a layer to this movie that like her character adds so much because she is that connection point to Deck and his shame and what he's like, he's fighting for something. And she's like along there, just like being with him, waiting for him to finally get it. And I think that if she's just not caring about her performance and phoning it in, like you don't get the actually weight that is being carried and that she's being this friend to Deck. And I think, yeah, I couldn't have thought of a better actress to play these two characters, because then on the flip side you get her Tessa side of it, which is, I mean, she's evil. She's, you know, she's not a great, I mean, she's not a person, she's a synthetic, but like she sucks, which is the mark of a good villain, obviously. But I absolutely loved her. Do you feel the same?
So this is the thing that I think I found the most exciting about the movie, was the way that I really gravitated towards her character. And mainly it's the, obviously Tessa's there, but you know, like you said, she plays the villain, and she plays the synthetic who, cannot overcome its programming anyway. And therefore is going to be, a static character, but Thea is a dynamic character. And I think the thing that's so wonderful, and this is where I, you know, casting can make a world of difference. Because Elle Fanning is so ridiculously charming and adorable as a person, it really makes the Thea character, who is one that could come up and could come off as obnoxious or frustrating or annoying because she just talks so much. As you're watching this film, I never felt that about the character because, again, there's something intrinsically adorable about her that you just want more of instead of less of. And that is an extremely fine line to walk as an actor. That is that might be one of the toughest things to do as an actor, because any deviance right or left, you're going to fall off that tightrope, and half the audience is just going to be like turned off by you as a character. I never felt that about this, and I never felt that about her at all.
I didn't even notice like the what you said, like the fact that I didn't think about it, I think proves that she's so wonderful as this, because yeah, she was talking like she was the, you know, annoying like sidekick that won't stop talking, but it's like, gosh, she's so delightful. Everything she's saying, whether it's comedic or like trying to actually help Deck, whatever it is, whatever the seriousness of the moment is, it's like, gosh, man, I can't get enough of her character.
Yeah. I mean, I came out of the film and it was funny because I put it on Letterboxd and you messaged me and you're like, oh, I'm so glad that you liked, you know, Badlands. And I think I said to you, because I had put this on, I don't like review a ton on Letterboxd, but I wrote a review and I was like, this sounds strange, but this movie is utterly charming.
Yeah.
And that seems like the oddest way to review Predator Badlands, because that's mm-hmm. not the first thing you would think of when you think of a Predator film. Mm-hmm. And yet she is the one who helps create that. And yet, even outside of Tessa, who she is playing a completely different and opposite character, mm-hmm. the interesting thing about Thea is she also has her own dimensionality in the sense that she's using Deck the whole time. Yeah. You know, for most of this movie, she's using Deck so she can get back to Tessa, who, mm-hmm. you know, she has this relationship with in the sense of, like, she hasn't been able to define it until now meeting mm-hmm. Deck and realize, oh, this is like my sister.
Yeah.
Which gives her this whole other dimensionality. But again, you know, she's here for her own purposes.
Yeah.
You know, Weyland Yutani didn't send them here just to study the planet, you know, mm-hmm. And they sent them to get the same creature that Deck is here after. Mm-hmm. And so there is this, you know, in many ways, this might also sound real, but, you know, there's that romantic comedy moment here where, like, the characters find themselves at odds mm-hmm. and it creates a distance between them. And that's exactly, again, that's what happens in this movie. And it's pulled off so well because Fanning does such a great job. And I am not going to try to pronounce Demetrius's whole last name because I don't want to butcher it. But he is a stunt double who has been tasked with playing Deck. And therefore, uh-huh. of course, he has a ton of makeup on. He's got the practical effects that are going into creating it as well as the augmented digital effects. And mm-hmm. yet, at the same time, I think he does such a good job with all of the physicality of Deck as a character, and all of that other trickery works so well. I never didn't buy that he wasn't a real character.
Yeah, it was cool. Like I love that they are doing this. Like it's not just like a CGI Predator. It's a guy right. in a suit giving a real performance. Obviously differently than like a typical thing, because it's just his physical presence. It's his physicality, like you said. And if you're not good at that, like that can be like that can be a problem in a movie if you cannot carry yourself and act in a way that, I mean, it's just using his body and expressions. And yeah, I was blown away by it. When I figured out who it was, I was like, this guy, like, keep this guy in the suit, keep Deck coming back. Like it added a lot to the movie that it wasn't just CGI or it wasn't just like a guy just walking around. Like the first Predator, like he's doing things, but it's the '80s and it's not nearly the same type of performance, in my opinion, that Demetrius. Yeah. It's a last name that he is giving, through like comedic, it was impressive. I loved every second of what he was doing. It was cool.
Yeah. And I mean, this is just one of those places where so many people came together to create a character that felt real. Mm-hmm. And that is an incredibly difficult thing to do mm-hmm. with the amount of special effects when it comes to CGI and makeup mm-hmm. and practical effects that all have to come together to make that real. But at the same time, if the physicality of the character doesn't come across, if the actor is not able to do that in the suit that he's in and all of that, again, that's all the CGI trickery and all the other stuff, that's mm-hmm. not going to matter. You know, yeah. And so Demetrius is really able to capture this character and I think bring it to life mm-hmm. and to help us to have it. Again, Elle Fanning really is the main character of the film in the sense that it's the one whose eyes we're kind of seeing the whole movie through for most mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
And because, and this is the other part, because she's the most human version of this world that we're in, yeah. we kind of see things through her eyes as well. And I think, because she does that so well, because she believes that Deck is so real, it's kind of like the reason that we all buy Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. Honestly, it's because Mark Hamill never doesn't believe that he's sitting there with a real person.
Right.
Right. And so he buys it, we buy it. And so it's the same thing now. We still need that to happen. And so the work here done by everyone involved was great. And then, of course, he's so good at obviously all the physical stuff he's got to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredibly important for this character.
Of course. Yeah.
You touch on the, and we've kind of touched on just a little bit, but there are some interesting thematic moments and themes just kind of running throughout the film. And I think this is probably the reason that I found myself gravitating towards the movie more than I would if it was just a good action movie, mm-hmm. but that this movie was really going to have thematic elements and not just try to be, you know, an action film. And one of them is this thought process between programming and free will. And both Thea and Deck have to deal with this in similar ways, but also different ways. You know, obviously, she's a synthetic who's kind of damaged. And therefore, in that quote-unquote damage she has, it gives her this really unique view of the world. And then Deck, on the other side, is a character who... we've mentioned he's the runt of the family. He's seen as being too weak to be a Yautja, and therefore he honestly should just die.
Yeah.
And
which is crazy.
Yeah. So apart from this movie being one that really is about that all people should get to live their life, regardless of whether how small they are or whatever, it also is very much a film about people learning to walk a different path than is anticipated. And, you know, that's pretty classic for films, but I just didn't expect to see this movie really kind of start to deal with something as big as, like, do I just follow my programming or do I break out and kind of figure out what I'm meant to do?
Yeah, I think, like, like you said, it wasn't expecting it. Movies have done this before where, you know, this is not a new trope by any means. And it's, I've seen it done well. I've seen it done poorly. Like, I think it was last year, The Wild Robot did this exceptionally well with programming versus free will.
Oh my gosh, The Wild Robot. Like, oh, yes.
Incredible. But like, let's call a spade, this is still like action, a crazy action movie that has action nonstop, but through all of that, they're still getting this theme across and other themes too. But there's a beautiful line that I think Thea says in the movie where she says that we can be more than what they ask of us, which it just encapsulates this entire idea that we're talking about, that she's recognizing and her as a synthetic, they tell us that she and her sister, Tessa have been created with like emotions or the ability to feel more, whatever it is. And she's like finally understanding like that I don't have to be the way that they specifically programmed me. I don't have to follow this strict programming. And for Deck, it's like he's realizing, Thea's kind of helping him realize, obviously, throughout the movie, but like he's at the start still trying to be a part of his clan. He's going to kill the Kalisk and bring it back to get his father's honor. I mean, he just watched his brother, like, you know, die.
Yes.
And he's still like sticking to that programming. Obviously, it's not the same as like being literally programmed as a synthetic, but throughout the movie, we're watching him like peel the blinders off over and over and over again to eventually finally realizing that he doesn't have to be a part of that clan that his father wants or has. One, he's not even wanted by his father, but two, there's something much better for him and that he's able to choose. He's able to create a different path for himself, which I think is really beautiful. And the fact that I felt as emotional as I did for a Yautja, I was like, this is crazy. This is really great.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there, because you mentioned this idea that we would live up to the expectations, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of those things to which we see in real life, right? That if all people have of you are really low expectations. That's what you end up usually living up to, is mm-hmm. these low expectations. And that's where I think we really see Deck, who is butting up against these expectations and wanting to be more, and yet because nobody really believes in him, mm-hmm. Except for his brother, like every other Yautja just looks at him and with disdain, as if like, you know, you shouldn't even exist, especially his own father. Totally. It doesn't allow him to truly transcend until we get to that point where he's around somebody who does believe in him. Like, you know, Thea the whole time is on his side and encouraging him, telling him that he could be Deck of the Yautja, right? Mm-hmm. That he could earn his cloak, you know, that he could mm-hmm. he could become the thing that he desires to be. And what he needed in the end is somebody to be there the whole time to truly believe in him. And I found that to be really interesting, because that's the other thing that I think we see them create their own clan, right?
Yeah, like totally.
Right. Like, and so therefore not their, the free will that they choose, especially Deck, is something that he stops seeing anything he could use as just a tool, and seeing it more as a being that deserves his respect and honor as well, mm-hmm. which is such an interesting change, especially for the culture that he comes from, where, mm-hmm. you know, I in many ways, I could almost see the Yautja culture is just being very prejudiced against anything and everyone else, because everything else is just seen as prey. Mm-hmm. And so to see anything as being worth being quote unquote friends with would be anathema. And mm-hmm. yet what we see here is him in his mind being able to go from something being prey to friend. Mm-hmm. And that understanding of the world or the universe or however you want to think about it is actually changes the entire trajectory of his life, right? Because he can see and realize that there's more to life than just the hunt. And that's something that, and that's another really interesting thematic element there that I did not expect, and I thought was incredibly salient and resonant mm-hmm. for the world that we live in today.
Yeah, it was really strong. I think you see it throughout the movie where, I mean, it's either prey or it's tool. Like, you see Deck try to like cope with the fact that Thea is not a threat to him. She's trying to help him survive this like crazy world, which was awesome. To, you know, the bat, you know, the death world is sweet, but he's wrestling with this and she's helping him, but he has to like cope in his mind to be like, she's not she's not a threat. She's not prey. It's not a worthy trophy. 'Cause that's his whole culture, is he has to bring back a worthy trophy. And she helps him. He's like, oh, you're a tool. Like, I can, he's coping his mind the whole movie, where there's, I don't remember when it was, but it was in the middle of the movie where they're like, they've been spending time together. And, she says something along the lines of friend or like not tool. And he's like, no tool. Like he mm-hmm. had to make sure that he kept up with his culture, that he kept up with what he was obviously programmed, for lack of better terms, to do. And the constant shift that's taking place throughout his mind and the tension that he's having throughout, obviously then when Bud, the little baby guy, comes in, mm-hmm. I think his name's Bud, her name's
yeah,
Bud.
Yeah, that's what they name her. Yes.
Her. Yeah. I was like, I think it's a girl, but they named her Bud, or Elle Fanning's character did. But it's this found family angle that is always just not going to not be like, it's always compelling to me. Like, found family movies and tropes, they work because it's like, it's just something that we need as human beings. Like, not our biological family might not always be the best, but you can find community and you can find family through other people. And it's really, it bridges cultures, it bridges species in this case, and expectations, and they become like friends, like you said, with a little tiny creature and then a synthetic. And I think what was really funny is I saw an interview with Trachtenberg talking about their dynamic and their friendship throughout the movie of Deck and Thea. And obviously Thea's strapped to his back the whole time. And he's like, I did it because I like Star Wars and Chewbacca and C-3PO. And so it was like a totally homage there. And so I loved that tone. I loved the journey that obviously they both go on, but Deck really goes on to realize that he can find a new clan, and that his clan at home is actually not one he needs to be a part of. And he has family elsewhere, which I thought was very strong.
Yeah. I mean, I also thought that this was in turning prey to friend. You know, there's something actually very interesting about that, because he realizes he doesn't have to destroy the Kallusk, right? When he realizes that the kindness to the Kallusk's kid that he showed mm-hmm. has actually allowed the Kallusk to show him kindness,
yeah,
by not destroying him, even though they've done battle, right? And mm-hmm. I think it really just ties into this whole aspect of this film, because not only does he realize that not all things need to be prey or deserve to be prey, but I think what mm-hmm. he realizes is that the better trophy is to collect friends. Like, look at my trophy case. Look at all my friends, you know, like, mm-hmm. and in the end, the movie is like, they should have just ended up with Jack Johnson's better together, because that's what they are.
Yeah.
Deck realizes we're so much greater together than we could ever be separate. And, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of really reminded me of in scripture where it says, you know, a strain of three cords is not easily broken. And that's what we get at the end of this film, right? We have this very odd trinity of characters who are much stronger together than they are separately. And that's the power of the film. And I think there's also something that's so interesting in that, because, you know, in the cultural moment that we're in, everything is such a binary and dichotomy between you're either an enemy or you're a friend. There's nothing in between. And the idea of trying to reach across any aisle, you know, politically mm-hmm. or whatever, to try and understand one another and to see each other as more than just prey, to be conquered, is the very thing that this movie shows. Maybe life would be better if we did that instead of the thing that we seem to be doing, which is just, no, we want to annihilate one another. And as we have seen recently, and, you know, maybe that means literally.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Like, we do live in this world where I think we do think of everybody that we are opposite of as like it's the enemy. It is like you cannot possibly be my friend. Like, I obviously you mentioned I'm a youth pastor, and I've had experiences with like students in the past that are like, they're like, yeah, I'm trying to follow Jesus and my friend, he's not. And so I had an experience like this quietly recently where I had a student be like, yeah, I blocked him on Instagram because he didn't want to. And I was like, you're missing the point, man. Like, you're missing, mm-hmm. like, we need to be friends. Like, just because they're not the same as you or same exact beliefs to a T, you know, like, I think The Last Jedi is good. Me and Matt are still friends. Like, and that's a silly example, but like, you get the idea where, just because there's a difference, just because there's a different culture or a different belief or different, whatever it is, doesn't mean there can't be unity found. And I think this movie clearly shows it, because it brings unity together among literal enemies, different species, mm-hmm. different kind, like, cultures, like literally every possible difference you can think of, they're like, we can find family together still. but yet we can't in this world, you know, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, too, that the switch then becomes, you know, there's that moment where when Deck realizes that Bud is the kid is of this Kallusk, right? I think it allows him to be able to see himself, right, in that kid, because the kid at this point is small and kind of runt-like. The Kallusk is huge. It's this massive beast that just cannot be killed, right? Seems, you know, unkillable. And so therefore, I think what's fascinating is that you have to be able to peel back the layers and of all of the things that we kind of just put on one another. And to be able to say, no, we're really not all that different, right?
Yeah.
And so where can we find some connection? Where can we find some thing that binds us together as people? And that's the thing. Again, I was really just, I was not expecting this movie to be that deep.
Yeah, neither was I.
The fact that it was is what really drew me to it. And so I loved it for that reason. And I really, you know, I came out of the theater just being like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I enjoyed this movie as much as I did, which was crazy. And I think a big part of that too was a movie like this, you know, effects wise, I'm used to them not having a lot of consistency. And and yet I was very impressed in the sense that is everything in this movie effects wise perfect? No, but I think that there was enough consistency across the board with the effects that they used and they did that I was never, I cannot recall a moment where I found myself pulled out because an effect shot didn't feel right with what they had been doing. Again, it just felt consistent. And that's really what you need more than perfection.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, I'm pretty critical when it comes to effects. Like, bad effects really can take me out of a movie. Like, it can be like, man, that's like, what do we, this movie cost X amount of money. How do we not have this looking better? But yeah, that wasn't the case. Like you said, there's, it wasn't perfect. There are some shots I'm like, this is beautiful, man. This looks like there's some like Star Wars-esque, like looks very Mandalorian-esque, where I'm like, this is sick. I'm such a big fan. But I think across the board, you obviously have the practical, like Deck is fully practical. I don't know if like his brother or the other predators were practical as well. They looked phenomenal in my opinion, if they weren't. And then you have like the creature, like the Kallusk, and you have all like these weird, this crazy world that has all these unique elements that if it does look weird and wonky and like imperfect a lot of time, it's going to take you out of it. And throughout the whole thing, like this Kallusk's head's chopped off and it's growing back so onto like, it looks smooth. It looks good. I'm like, this obviously doesn't look real, but like it looks real for what the movie is making out to be.
Right.
Where there wasn't a moment, like you said, where I was like, oh gosh, because there's movies all the time that whether it's an MCU movie or whatever it is, there's VFX lacking. And I'm like, oh, we should have done better, but I didn't feel that at all. I thought it looked great. Thought the action looked amazing with what they were doing with practical versus the visual effects. So big fan there.
Yeah. I mean, that moment where his head was growing back together reminded me of in BVS where Wonder Woman chops off Doomsday's arm, you know, and then all the spikes just kind of grow out of it. And I was like, that's a great moment in that film of the effects doing what they're supposed to do, you know, and
of course.
And I agree with you where this just had the effect that you want. And, like the effects need to serve the film in a way, again, that don't bring you out of the movie. And I think that they were able to do that. And so last thing here, I just wanted to ask you about, I'm not really familiar with Sarah Schachner. I am familiar with Ben Wolfish. And so they did the music for this. And I wanted to ask you how you felt about that, because there are many parts of this film where the music is really driving a lot of the action, because there are parts of it where there are not a lot of dialogue. And so I wanted to ask you how you felt like they did, because, you know, music can make or break a film if it's just not working.
Yeah, 100%. I, like I said, I went and saw it in IMAX. I wanted to see an IMAX. I thought it looked so, I thought the trailers looked so good, like visually. So I was like, I want to go see this on the nicest screen I can. I was sitting near the middle, but kind of, or middle, top to bottom, near the middle, but on the right side, and IMAX speakers in the corner. And it was booming out of my seat. And I was like, this rocks so much. The score, I thought, was phenomenal. I think that it's like, it only adds to all these action set pieces and these huge moments of the fighting. Like you said, I'm not familiar with Sarah, but I'm familiar a little bit with Benjamin's. Obviously, he's done, you know, he did Alien Romulus a couple years ago, Blade Runner 2049. Like, this guy's talented, clearly. And I thought it only added to the movie. I saw some complaints saying it was like too loud, and I didn't feel that way. I thought that it was like very, very solid. I haven't listened to it, like gone back and listened to it on Spotify or anything, but I've thought about it since the movie, since I watched the movie. So I understand that these type of scores can feel a little invasive and a little over the top, but for me, it only added to it. I'm curious if you felt the same.
I went and saw this in Dolby Cinema, right? Which, nice. You know, like the IMAX experience is really known for not just projection, but also sound. You know, it's one of their big things. It's Dolby Theater.
Yeah.
And yes, this was incredibly loud. And I felt like the movie had the right amount of weirdness to it without being so discordant. I don't want to hear it. I have listened to the score outside. I was actually listening to it today while I was at work. And I actually really enjoy it. I just think it's an interesting score. It's a fun score. It has its own sense of being and like purpose for the film, but it also has its own tonal nature to it, to which feels very much like it belongs with the Predators.
Yeah, it fits fully in this universe.
Exactly, which is what you want. Like, and so, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. And so, we have talked a little bit about this, and you know, you being just a little bit more familiar with, and especially the Trachtenberg universe here of Predator. Does this movie make you excited for what would come next? Because, I mean, there is a slight teaser in this at the end of the movie with his mom showing up at the end.
Yeah, which...
And so, basically, do you just want to see them pick up where they left off?
Yeah, I think... So, like I said, I've seen the original Prey, Killer of Killers, and now this. And I've listened to some podcasts and different things that of people that have watched all this stuff. But I would love for them to pick up where they left off. Women, I keep forgetting how to say their species, but women predators, they are they're not explored a lot in this franchise. I think there's one time that they are in a movie maybe, but they're in books and graphic novels. And so that interests me a lot. The fact that his mom, who seemingly the way that he made it sound is like bigger and badder and scarier than even his dad was. And so I'm like, let's run it back. I know Trachtenberg talked about in an interview, like when he first was dreaming up this stuff, he wanted to make Prey, he wanted to make Badlands, and then a third movie that he's hoping to still make. And I'm like, yeah, I give him the keys to the kingdom. Like, I'm here for what he's doing. I think the other thing that really makes this really interesting. And it is a spoiler for the end of Killer of Killers. If you want to know, I can say it. It helps.
Yeah, that's fine. Otherwise, I'm not going to be upset about it.
Okay.
I'll go back and watch it. You know, people.
So
just be aware.
Killer of Killers. So Prey obviously it's like Native American. Mm-hmm. That's the time period. And the lead is named Nora or Naru, something like that. She's great. Amazing. Well, Killer of Killers is an anthology that takes three different, like it's a Viking, it's a pilot, and it's a samurai from different time periods, and they get brought to the same timeline to Yautja Prime, their home planet, into a coliseum to fight which is really interesting lore, obviously. And everything happens, and two of them get away, and then the Viking woman is taken back in I don't remember what the right word is, but like frozen, you know, in like a tomb type thing.
Oh, just like a cryostasis or something?
Cryostasis, thank you. So cryostasis, and they bring her in, and that the movie ends. Then credits roll, and then after the credits happen, they're continuing to bring her farther and farther into this space where they have all these cryostation pods of all these different people that they have captured. And you're painting, and all of a sudden you see Naru, the girl from Prey, animation.
Okay.
Yeah. There. You keep going. You see Harrigan from Predator 2, played by, I forget who plays him, but iconic actor. I should really remember this. But Harrigan, he's the lead of Predator 2. And then all of a sudden you see Dutch, Arnold Schwarzenegger's character.
Oh, wow. Okay. Danny Glover.
Danny Glover. There, yeah. So you see these characters in these cryostation pods.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And so it's like there's all this like obviously talk now of like where is this gonna go? How would they do this? Arnold is old, like these guys are old now. And so I think it's very interesting to see where they could go. And I, with Trachtenberg's track record, with what he's doing, have at it, man. Like I'm seated for all these things.
See, that's fascinating to me. And because I know that I was reading some interviews with him that they have been in talks with Arnold, right, for him to come back. And so this feels like the type of thing where, you know, do you do kind of a motion capture type of thing, or do you just allow him to have his voice and do maybe a completely CGI character, or do you do body replacement and all that kind of stuff and de-age? Who knows, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many tricks that you could do to bring somebody back. But I'm with you in the sense that after watching this, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I would like to see more. You know, I was making the joke on one of my other podcasts the other day, but it just feels very much the same. You know, Starship Troopers, would you like to know more? Yes. So yeah, I'm right there with you that I would enjoy seeing another film, especially because I came out of this one so positively. So with that in mind, and with our conversation basically being nothing but glowing, I am very interested, you know, with the Letterboxd 5-star rating scale.
Yeah.
What are you going to give Predator Badlands?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I've seen the movie twice. I forgot to mention that. I went back and watched it, not in IMAX, but I am currently sitting at a 4-star, very high, very complimentary 4-star. Could easily go up to a 4.5. I think, but it's a vibes thing, and you know, it's not the most perfect movie, but I did love it. I had a blast. It's one of my favorites of the year. I think I've seen yours. You're similar, correct?
Dude, it's interesting because I think what you just said pretty much encapsulates how I feel about this film. And, you know, this is kind of what I love when this happens, because this doesn't happen very often. And I think you can probably understand this as well, right? Both you and I follow what's coming out in the cinema.
Yeah.
probably too religiously, right? And therefore, because of that, there's not a lot that really surprises you that much. And yet, this was one of those movies where I knew it was coming out. And I saw the trailers. They kind of looked interesting, and they got me to the theater. But I didn't go into this film with any expectations whatsoever, because the only film I've seen in this franchise is Predator, right?
Yeah, the original.
Exactly. And so because of that, I'm not saddled with all of this baggage, and being able to just walk in, let the movie do its thing, and if I respond to it, that's great. If I don't, okay. I mean, you know, I've got AMC A-list, whatever. So no skin off my nose. but I'm with you. This is such a solid 4-star film. And I also believe this film in a rewatch could absolutely be a 4.5.
I'm close.
And because, again, I was so utterly charmed by the movie. And a big part of that had to do with Elle Fanning's performance. She just gives such a winning, wonderful, fun, vibrant, joyful, silly, ridiculous, off-the-wall performance here that it makes everything else work. And and not only that, but because this movie was willing to kind of turn the whole Predator franchise in some ways on its head and tell a story from a completely different perspective and let us in on these characters and just try something really new and different, and it ended up working, I think that's also the thing that really made me enjoy the movie. And like you, I'm excited now to see what comes next. And so this is one of those things where, like, it doesn't happen all that often where a movie comes out and I'm like, oh, we got to talk about this. I mean, I feel like the last time that happened here on this show was when Arrival came out, and it blew my mind so utterly. I was like, must talk about this film, and had to do basically an emergency podcast with some friends because it was so good. Yeah. And you've got the
tattoo
art of their language on your arm, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So thanks for doing this, but as we do for every episode, we wrap up with just where, you know, where people can find you. So if, like, people wanted to, you know, follow you on Letterboxd or other places, where are you and where could they check out what's going on with Rye?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, thank you. It's been a blast. I hope we can do this again. I am on Letterboxd. My handle is 182nd, O-N-E-82-N-D. I write reviews for everything. I watch a lot of movies. So you can read what I'm writing over there. I do have two podcasts that have been hopefully picking back up. One's called the Chicken the Duck Podcast. You can find it on every platform. And then I have another podcast called Redeeming Reels, where I talk about just movies in general. And so either one of those are on YouTube, Spotify, anywhere you find podcasts. So,
man, that's great. And I'm really glad we got a chance to do this. We'll definitely be doing it again because it was just so much fun. But of course, everybody can find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing 02. If I'm on the platform, that's my name. Of course, here on the network, you'll find me doing a bunch of Star Trek talk with Chris Jones and a lot of the different shows here, whether that's Saddle Up or The Orb, Warp 5, all of those places. So check us out. And of course, over on the Nerd Party Network, got a couple of shows. One's completed called Owl Post, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then talking Star Wars every week with John Mills on Aggressive Negotiations. But thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear?